for the platinum resistant setting, obviously you shouldn't use any more platinum because the patient is now platinum resistant. But there are a host of other agents with activity in ovarian cancer now that do offer patient benefit. The six things that I tend to do in my practice. Number one, I use single agents in that setting because we don't have any proof that combinations are better than single agents in platinum-resistant disease. And number two, there are six drugs that I think not only are they commercially available and reimbursable for the private practitioner, but they also all have clear-cut activity in platinum-resistant disease. Doxil, topotecan, gemcitabine, oral etoposide, weekly Taxol, if the patient had every three-week Taxol up front, and Taxotere. All of those approaches will give response rates in the range of 15 to 20% and will give some survival benefit if you use second line. Now, I usually start with Doxil, and that has to do with our demographics here. On the East Coast, most patients ride down an elevator 15 floors to get to the clinic, but here they cut dry from 100 miles away, and so Doxil is once every 4 weeks, so convenience is the main factor there. We use topotecan second, gemcitabine third, etoposide fourth, weekly Taxol fifth, and Taxotere sixth, and most of our patients will go through five or six different regimens before they quit. I think there are two other agents that probably will have to be considered to be added to that list. Alimta is one, we mentioned that earlier, and bevacizumab is the other, though bevacizumab has the question mark about increased complication rate in patients who've had multiple prior treatments.
So do you think right now, putting cost and reimbursement issues aside, there's a potential role in non-protocol setting for bevacizumab?
Yeah, and in fact, it's being used as such in some states. In some states, it's reimbursed. In others, it's not. In Mississippi, it's not. That's where I am. But I've been told by physicians in California and New York that it's reimbursed there. So you do see bevacizumab use in those settings. But one thing I do disagree with some other folks about, a lot of people think bevacizumab is by far the best drug in that setting. I don't think we have any evidence that that's the case. The response rates for bevacizumab look very similar to other things used in that setting. The overall survivals look very similar. So I think bevacizumab is another active agent that can be used in that setting and is a perfectly reasonable choice as one of the therapeutic options.
You want to comment on some of the issues as you manage a patient who has bevacizumab, what you've observed, for example, in terms of hypertension, proteinuria?
Frankly, in patients who are first relapse, who've had very little prior treatment, we see very little of that. And in the GOG study upheld that, there was very little serious toxicity in the GOG study. So if you're using it in that population, you're not going to see much. And as I said, we don't get reimbursed for it, so we haven't used it very often as a single agent in that setting. But most of the patients we've been treated have been in either the first or second relapse, not later down the line. The studies that did look at it later down the line report double-digit instances of bowel complications, hypertension, hemorrhage.